Here we go, hour two of the Home Improvement Show. And again, like always, I'll welcome in the 97.1 FM listeners into the second hour, but I will also try and remind all of them that we do this for 2 hours. So if you need your home improvement fix to be a little longer than an hour, join us at 11 a.m. on KMOX to get things started, and you can hear the full 2 hour show, Home Improvement Show, right here again with me, Rich Orris. And for everybody out there, whatever you need, whatever you got going on, we've had a lot of great questions so far. And you'll find me, just dial 314-436-7900, get you straight into me. Anything you need on, about, or around your home. And we kind of, we ended our conversation in the first hour with Paul about some trying to keep water out from through a porch floor and painting and caulking and maybe using a little better paint that's for deck floors, for outdoor floors that really claims to work well and not let water through it and seal well. It would definitely be a better option than just regular floor paint when it's outside and it's getting wet. But the pro tip here really is, before you paint this, knowing the moisture, understanding before you get into this, don't just check the weather, but check the actual wood, check the board itself, because you're actually looking for a moisture content below 15% in the board. I'd say the sweet spot is about 12%. If you could have it right there, that would be really good. And so if it's too wet, like Paul was mentioning with his, it leads to peeling and bubbling and then a bunch of frustration trying to keep this painted, get it painted, and make it last. And if it is very close to the ground, then the issue comes in sometimes, that if the ground's very moist and it's not getting a lot of wind and it doesn't dry, it just, those moisture vapors just come up through those deck boards and it keeps those deck boards moist all the time. So for about $30 to $60 or something like that, you can find a moisture meter, test those boards out. I definitely recommend testing them out in the shady spots, not just right where it's hot and sunny and really drying them out. But if there's another side that doesn't get quite the sun, check over there for sure. And then, you know, if it's too dry, if it's down and really too dry, then you could have an issue with it absorbing too much and kind of not going on evenly. And so you can have just as much problems if it's too dry as if it's too wet. Also, so checking that out and knowing and understanding that is a great thing to do before painting on your deck boards, floorboards, and really understanding what to use. And, you know, there's all these products out there, and they can work really, really great. We had a wood sealing product we used years ago. That was another one of those types of products that we kind of learned the hard way, is really trying to seal the entire board is very important. But then if the sealer works too well, so we had some problems with it working so well that you then couldn't stain it or do anything to it to make it look pretty and to make it look like a nice piece of wood, a nice color, because it's kind of like I said, if that board's too dry, it's going to absorb too much. If it's too wet, it's going to bubble up later. Well, you put the sealer on there that seals that board so well, it doesn't let that, any of that stain, anything you put on it, absorb in and really soak in. So it was a great sealer if you didn't want to do anything to the board. If you just wanted it, if you'd let it turn gray, like a cedar board turned gray, and never put anything on it, it would have lasted a really long time. But everybody wants, they want things beautiful. We all want our houses to look sharp and well and pretty, and a gray deck board just looks like a weathered gray deck board isn't always the aesthetic essential that we're looking for. So not a lot of people wanted that. So as we're trying to put stain on top of it, it would want to peel off and it wouldn't absorb, just as if it was the opposite of too wet, and it just wouldn't let anything in. So we kind of learned that the hard way and stopped using that product for that reason. But other than that, it was, you want a piece of wood to last, that was the way to do it. But it worked so well, you couldn't make it beautiful. So there's so much to examine with all of the products and procedures and materials, and there's thousands and thousands of different materials and different products, and it's almost impossible to keep up with. And there's new products coming on in our industry daily, yearly, by the thousands. It's quite amazing. It's nonstop, and you just got to really watch what works in one climate might not work so well in another climate. So what strips paint from a specific type of paint may not strip a different type of paint. And so really understanding what you're working with, or getting small pieces of trial strippers to say, okay, if I use this one in a little area, how well does it work? How easy was it? And try two or three of them and find out which one works the best and is the easiest, and then go with that one when you make the major purchase. But there's just a lot to work through, examine, understand, and there are a ton of factors for all these tasks and all these products and everything we're doing. There's a lot to figure out. So getting to some experts, getting to people that have done enough to make a few mistakes and understand clearer, like, wow, that didn't work. And we learn from our mistakes and we understand. So getting to someone like that to help you out could be a really good thing. And that's what I can do for you right here today on the show. Again, you can find me 314-436-7900. We got plenty of time, plenty of things we can work through. But again, your stories, your questions, your topic is the main topic of the Home Improvement Show today and every Saturday. So jump in when you can. We're going to take our break. Again, you can find me 314-436-7900. We'll have more home improvement right after this. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show here. Rich Orris here for you. Again, 314-436-7900. Anything you need all about around your house, from the roof to the foundation, we've got you covered today. Whatever you need. And let's get straight into the phone with BJ. Has a question for us. What's going on?
Well, I appreciate your show. Appreciate the information that you put out. I've got a foundation problem in the corner of my garage. It's a slightly elevated concrete wall, and I've got a significant crack in that corner. Is that something I could fill, or is that something that I need some engineer to come out and say that the footer is also cracked, or what do I need to do, Rich?
So is the crack you're talking about in the floor itself?
No, it's actually...
It's in the foundation wall?
Corner of the foundation, where the back wall meets the side wall.
Okay.
Raised about, probably about 2.5 feet. So it's visible to see, but I can't see, unless I dig up go down to the footer, I can't see beyond that space.
Yeah, it would be good to get with a foundation company to look at the crack and assess, because concrete will crack, and there's shrinkage cracks. There's all sorts of reasons it cracks. Movement's the most common reason, but it's a matter of trying to figure out, is there enough movement to where if you were to fill this crack, is it going to matter? If it moves more, it's just going to open right back up. So it's about trying to determine, do you need to do some kind of peering to stop the foundation from moving? How much has it moved? And foundation repair companies and structural engineers can look at these cracks and assess the house. They can shoot a laser and measure and see if it's level or not, how much has it moved, and then they can really advise you on do you think it's something that you either just fill and it's just a shrinkage crack and you don't have too, you know, nothing really to worry about, or is it something where it's good to peer and stop some movement.
So do you have some good companies you'd recommend, Rich?
I recommend a foundation company called Stratum Structural. It's Stratum Structural Services, and they can look at, they do all the typical foundation repairs, the piers, mud jacking and crack filling and all of that type of stuff. They do wall anchors, basically any type of foundation repair. They're very good. They'll be very thorough, and they'll let you know if they're even, you know, not quite certain and maybe need to do some more work or get some kind of structural engineer or somebody involved. I don't think you'll be there, but they're just really, really good guys. Been working with them for a really long time.
Where are they located at?
Their shop is out in Chesterfield. It's kind of in Chesterfield Valley is where their office is. But they go all over St. Louis, Illinois, you know, the whole St. Louis metro area and into Illinois. They'll go all around there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Appreciate the call and the question. And that is a company I deal with a lot. When I find something, that's who I'm bringing in and pulling in to help myself and help Mosby Building Arts take care of issues like that. So let's jump over to John and see what's happening with John. How
Good
you doing today,
sir?
Good afternoon.
I have a two-door system going from my kitchen to outside. Outer door is a metal storm door. Inner door is a wooden door. On the bottom of the frame, not on the door, on the floor itself, is an aluminum door sill. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in that is a rubber insert.
Uh-huh.
That rubber insert is starting to break, and it's not completely loose yet, but it's getting there.
Okay.
Can I remove just that rubber insert, take it to some place, and if so, where, and get a replacement piece?
Yes.
Do I need to unscrew that entire metal plate?
So is the rubber insert, is it kind of like a U-shaped kind of bubble?
No, it's actually, it's about an inch to an inch and a quarter wide, front to inside to outside.
Uh-huh.
And it looks kind of like, I haven't pulled it loose yet, but it looks like it's a letter D with a flange on the back.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, you got it. So yes, you can find that. I used to find them. And I haven't done it in quite some time, but you used to be able to find them in the big box stores like Lowe's, Home Depot. If you pull cut a piece out or pull it out, take a piece with you. It basically comes flat with that kind of little L-shaped little notch at each end, and you kind of bend it and reinsert it into that sill. So you can replace those. Without pulling that entire sill out. It's just a matter of finding the right one. And I would imagine if you're pretty good internet savvy, if you were to take that rubber piece out and measure it, kind of how wide it is or whatever, you could probably find it online and order a piece of it. And then you just cut it. Like they'll send you a 3-foot piece. And if your door is 32, you just cut it down and install the new piece.
Okay, if this is a letter D with two flanges, one at the top and bottom of the D,
uh-huh,
that attach into the grooves, how do I get that in there? Do I put the one side in first and then use a flat blade screwdriver to shove the other?
Yeah, or like a putty knife. A putty knife works pretty well. One about 3-4 inches wide works too. So yeah, you basically put the one side in, you bend it, get it down and kind of lock it in there, and then you can push it down with like a 2-3 inch wide putty knife, something like that, to lock it in.
Okay. I have to find a neighbor that's got a putty knife now.
Yeah, a screwdriver is just kind of small. It's not very wide, and you can poke through it.
That's what I was afraid of.
Way easier if you have a screwdriver that's only a quarter or 3/8 inch wide. If you're using something at least a 1 inch wide putty knife, then you're taking on more of that flat surface and less likely to puncture through it.
Great. Thank you for the information. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Not a problem at all. I appreciate the call and the question. Haven't seen one of those in a while, but it's very, very common. And, looking at BJ talking about his garage and the garage foundation wall, the garage is somewhere that we do see quite a bit of movement. Just the way that where it is and the foundation doesn't necessarily go all the way around. And there's a lot of overdig around the whole foundation, but there's usually a lot more in the garage. So a lot of times when building a whole house and installing a foundation, the garage is kind of where they'll drive in and out with bobcats. So there's a lot more backfill underneath and around a garage typically than the rest of the house and the foundation. And if anybody's ever bought a house that was new, just built, or 10 to 20 years old, and always noticed that like every 5 to 10 years, the dirt around the foundation seems to kind of settle down and it flattens out, and you really need to add soil around that foundation to keep a slope away from the house. That's just part of that overdig. When you fill it back up, that dirt has so much air in it. When they put it back, they're really trying to compact it. They don't like water compaction anymore. A lot of years back, you used to do a lot more water compaction where they'd stick these pipes in that soil, run a bunch of water. They do that under the garage floors, but now they're kind of like, well, you don't really want to run too much water around all this new work and everything. So they kind of stop doing that and just kind of let it settle more naturally now, pile it up, let it settle down some. But it's the same way as when you get a new sewer lateral across your front yard and they leave that dirt humped up 2 feet tall for months, and then they come clean it all off, shave it all down, and kind of level everything out. But then 2 years, 3 years, 4 years later, you got this dip in your yard. Well, you've got 8 feet of soil compacting back down and getting rid of all that air and the water settling it. So, yeah, it just settles down, and it's just a maintenance thing that we got to add more soil. We got to level things out. We got to recreate the slope away from the house. But we see a lot of movement around the garages because of all those conditions when they build the house and everything, and it just happens. And typically that foundation footing piece is only about 3 feet deep, where the rest of the house, it's a full 8 foot, 9 foot, 10 foot bore. And it's dug way deeper than that garage footing. So it is typical. It's not a huge, huge deal. And it's definitely something that can be taken care of. And if we can help you take care of anything else, I'll be right here for you. We're going to get into our middle of the hour break. But again, 314-436-7900. Give me a call, whatever you need. I'll be here for you right after this. Welcome back. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show. Got a lot going on today. A lot of great questions and conversations happening. And if you need anything, you got a project you're thinking of, you got an issue happening, you got some sort of maintenance you're kind of curious or wondering about, 314-436-7900. We'll get you right here to me. Anything you need. And I think while we wait, I got a story. We had some garage stuff come up, so it kind of sparked some garage conversations that I've had. And for everybody out there, if you did not know, here where I work, my day-to-day job at Mosby Building Arts, we do pretty much everything residential. We do garage doors. We can come out and only look at your garage door. So how cool is that? Think of how many companies out there could you say, like, oh, well, who replaced your garage door? Oh, well, Mosby Building Arts did that. Oh, cool. I think I'll call them and have them look at my kitchen remodel or my bathroom remodel. Handling everything is a really cool, really great service that we kind of provide. And we do a lot of that in-house with our people. So the guys installing your garage door are our employees, and we can get the stuff and we put it in. And we don't service and repair garage doors that we haven't installed. We will on, we'll do all that once we've put that in there. But we won't really just come out and do that type of service for like all the garage doors everywhere, but the ones that we put in and install, then we will stick with you. We want to really take care of our clients on every level that we can, and that's just another way that we do that. So I'm going to hold off on my really cool, funny garage story here, and let's get to Jeff and see what kind of question Jeff has for us.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question's about attic insulation. 1,600 square foot branch style home. It's got an eave vent, and it has openings on each end of the house. And I need to find out if I actually should have soffit vents instead of the vents on either side of the house.
Okay. So when you say either side of the house, are you talking about like what we call the gable, where it's a big triangle and you've got,
yes.
Okay. And you've got that square on each end of that triangle. So on the roof, do you know if you have any kind of exhaust ventilation up on the roof?
Not on the roof itself, just the, vent that runs along the ridge.
Okay, so yeah, so at the very top, you've got a ridge vent up there.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. And then, so down at the, where you mentioned kind of the eaves, where the gutters are, do you have open soffits there, or do you have soffit material with holes in it where there's air coming in from below those gutters on the bottom of the house?
There are holes in the soffits. It's like every other one.
Okay.
I just don't know if it's there just for looks or if there's actually openings under the roof, under the eaves, where the air can actually get up into the attic. I don't know if it's open.
Yeah, and that the hard way to figure that out is through the attic and going down towards that eave and seeing if it's blocked. And a lot of times you got to might even have to move insulation around to do that. Or if you can see what we call a ventilation baffle, where there's kind of like an egg crate looking material between the rafters.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of the baffles.
Yeah. So whether your low intake at those eaves is working or not is hard to say, and yet to be determined without actually going down there and really seeing what's there. But on the other side where you have the two gable vents, one at each end of the house, and you have the ridge vent, if that ridge vent runs all the way down to the edge of the roof, and typically they stop that maybe a foot to 16 inches from the roof, they may run the vent the rest of the way, but they don't cut out the plywood.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down. Well, if you get within that foot or so of the edge of that roof, then that actually will backfire kind of how it should ventilate with those gable vents that are on each end. So your ridge vent is actually meant to pull air from that eave down by the gutter, and it pulls it in from there and up the roof. Now, if you have these gable vents and they're within 2 to 3 feet of that ridge vent, then what happens is that ridge vent just starts pulling air from there instead of down low, and it kind of short circuits how that ventilation should work and where you should be getting that air from. So
yeah, I think that's what I've got. I think the traditional way they built the house was with the gable vents, and then I asked for the ridge vent because I knew it was more efficient, but I don't think they have the soffit vents. So I think basically all my air is just coming in through the gable vent and then right out the roof and not really ventilating the attic.
Yep. And so the easiest thing you could do that will help, whether the soffit vents are working real well or not, because it'll still pull air and it'll still move air out on that ridge vent some, is basically go inside that attic and block off that gable vent from the inside of the attic. You just need to stop air from coming through it.
Okay.
And typically what I do that with, I wouldn't do it with like just a straight piece of plastic, because you can get condensation on like a thin piece of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
I typically what I look at using is like a thicker, like styrofoam insulation board. You can buy it at Lowe's or Home Depot. You can get it about an inch thick, and you basically just cut it to size, take it up in the attic and kind of screw it to the trusses. And it can be bigger, and just screw it into the wood of the trusses with like four screws and just block off that gable vent so it doesn't pull air in through that gable vent anymore. And I do both ends.
If my soffit vents are not open, is that something that an insulation company can do?
Not
open those up?
Not really, unless they're because the problem is, at most part, there's usually like wood in the way. And you're going in there and you've got to try and cut out the wood or drill like 1,000 holes through it. If you're going to drill holes through it, like one hole's typically not enough. Like you would want to drill a bunch of holes. If that board's 2 foot wide, you'd want to drill like a 1-inch hole every 2 inches all the way down that board. Put like 12 holes through it in every single board to kind of get that air through. And then the insulation company can use those ventilation baffles to make sure that their insulation doesn't block the holes or the piece of wood that got cut out, and because you don't want to stop the air with the insulation then.
Right. I had an energy audit done last year, and they said I did need more insulation in the attic. So I was thinking about calling a company to do that, and then I was going to see if they could do the other part too, as far as opening up the
Ask them. They may. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Sometimes you just got to direct them to what they need to do, and then they might be good for it. So, yep, I would definitely start with them. And if they just can't, then you're looking for more like some type of carpenter.
Okay. And can I ask one other quick question?
Sure.
What's your opinion on those reflective barriers that they advertise to put up against your eaves in the roof area?
Oh, something
those
that you lay
barriers.
Oh, that you lay inside the attic?
Well, I've seen those. I've also seen them where you nail them to the underside of the rafters.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do that I wouldn't do that in my house. I wouldn't do that if it were me, especially the one that lays on the insulation. Cuz the thing that really worries me the most is any type of condensation. So if you've got this reflective thing and you're it's really cold in your attic and you lose some heat during the winter through that ceiling, through a light fixture, through the attic access panel or anything, I worry more that you'll get condensation and literally water forming on that material in the attic space.
Okay.
And that's more of a concern to me. I've seen more issues with attics because of things like that, not necessarily that material, but because of condensation, than I have seen because of just heat and sun and that sort of thing.
Okay. Good to know.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Perfect, Jeff. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call and the good questions. And we're going to jump into our final break here. Jim, if you could hold the line, we will bring you on as soon as we return right after these messages. Well, folks, here we are. Final segment of the Home Improvement Show. We've got Jim on the line. Let's go straight there and see how we can help Jim out. What's going on?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just getting ready to repaint an upstairs bathroom, and I have some fixtures that I'm taking down. So I have some screw holes that I'm going to patch, and the area where the curtain rod was mounted above the shower is a little chewed up as well from where the shower rod was kind of moving around a little bit. Can I just use regular joint compound to patch those, or do you recommend using a water-resistant joint compound since it's near the shower?
I mean, on an area that small, I wouldn't be quite as concerned using a regular joint compound. They do make like mold and moisture resistant. And you can look for some that's labeled mold or moisture resistant. There's like the USG's got a Proform light blue, I think it is, that would work really well. But I mean, when you're talking a couple areas like that and around a light fixture and you're painting the whole place, I wouldn't go out of my way to do that. Now, if you're remodeling and taping and mudding the whole bathroom with new drywall, it's a great idea. But they also make that moisture resistant. It comes in the it's a powdered form. You mix it yourself. And it sets up a lot faster. So if you were buying something, that might be the way to go. If you can buy that with some moisture resistant in it, because it'll set up faster for you. You can get like a 20-minute setup. And so that way you can do it two or three times even in an hour or so. And then get to your work after that. So I might recommend that one just to speed you up a little bit.
Okay. Sounds like a good plan. Thanks for the advice.
All right. Very good. No problem. You're very welcome. And good luck on your fixing up and painting. It's awesome. Awesome time to do it. We've got the heat and everything. So getting on to inside projects like that, painting inside, now is a great time to do that, especially if you get paints with the low VOCs and you don't really have to worry as much about ventilation, opening, cracking windows or anything. Definitely use paints like that, and that'll help you out and keep you going inside while it's hot outside. So let's jump over to Bill real quick and see what's happening there. Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Hey, Riz, thanks for taking my call. I know I'm short on time. I didn't hear the gentleman before when he called in and said about the attic.
Uh-huh.
I've had a problem with my cathedral ceiling. I've been in my house 37 years, and it's the third time the paint's all coming off around the perimeter. Now, I had Mosby come out and do an inspection of the house, and at the time I had gable end vents. So I had them all blocked off when I had the house resided, and I put perforated all along the rafter tails, and I knocked out all the bird blocks. Well, I repainted everything, and now we are 9 years later. It's coming back again. And I had a painting company come out last week and look at it, and they're perplexed. They don't, you know what's going on. They said they've been running across a lot of that possibly back when the house was built in the 80s, they were using, some contractors were using recycled drywall. And I just want to know any options I might have. Could it be a heat related issue? Do I need to get some?
I would say you're probably more of a heat related issue. So even though you got that ventilation moving a little better and probably eliminated some of that heat by getting the ventilation to work better.
Yeah.
When you're at the bottom point of a vaulted ceiling like that, you don't have a lot of insulation down there. So if you
Got the little cardboard blockers in there to let the heat go up.
Yeah.
But it's doing it on the inside walls too. That's what I just didn't understand.
Oh, it's doing it on the inside walls.
All around the perimeter. The room's like 25 feet by 23. And it's doing it on the outside walls and all the inside walls, the two inside walls.
Yeah, that makes it more interesting because most of what I've seen always, it was kind of around the outside walls of the house.
Right.
Is where you saw it the most and not a lot of so it could be kind of like an air movement type of thing. Is it kind of like dark spots?
No, the paint's just cracking, peels off. It's just it starts cracking and then it gets bigger and then it eventually it'll fall off.
Yeah, it almost has to be a like temperature kind of heat related. It's between that and how well things were primed and painted and how
I fixed it once before and I put an enamel based Porter paint primer sealer on it.
Uh-huh.
And that lasted me 9 years. Now it's back.
Yep. And you're probably just up against that with the conditions of the home. It's you're kind of a maintenance thing of redoing it and trying to get it the last 8, 9, 10 years each time. So unfortunately, I think you're just battling that. But, hey, Bill, I apologize. Totally out of time. Wish you good luck with that. And for everybody else out there, be good to your homes. And I will talk to all of you again next week.